Welcome back to the Big Green Politics Podcast. I'm Sedan.
And I'm Julia. As you may know, the European elections took place last week from the 23rd to the 26th of May. 28 countries cast their votes on who should represent them in the European Parliament.
As many were hoping, the green wave is not stopping. It has just swept across Europe, and there's a lot to unpack.
For some reason, no one was expecting this result, even though it's been decades long in the making.
Yes, so sit back and relax while we analyze what went right and what went wrong at the elections. Okay, so last week, like we said, more than 400 million Europeans in 28 member states were called to the ballot box over 4 days to elect the new members of the European Parliament, which is the EU's only directly elected body. And one of the things that stood out during this process was the voter turnout, as more than 50% of eligible electors went ahead and voted in these elections.
Yeah, apparently it's the highest turnout since 1994, right?
Exactly. Yeah, this is really important because when it comes to the European elections, the turnout has been steadily declining since the elections were first held in 1979. So back in those days, the turnout was 62%. So it went from that to only 42.6% in 2014 in the previous elections. So having more than half of the people voting in 2019, that's a great victory.
Yeah. And in Poland, for example, they had the record turnout, which is still quite low, actually, but it's 43% since they joined in 2004.
Exactly. And compared to 2014, they doubled the turnout in Poland. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Actually, when it comes to the individual states, the highest levels of provisional voter turnout was in Belgium at 89%.
Wow, that's really high.
That is high. That's really high.
I guess they're always reminded of the EU, like they can't really escape
exactly.
It.
Exactly, it's the capital. I was just about to say that. Yeah, so I guess it's a huge part of everyone's life here. But then the second one was the neighbor, Luxembourg, at 84%. Denmark hit their record at 63%. So these are some of the good examples of individual states having really high levels of voter turnout. But then some nations, not so much. They kind of pretty much didn't give a shit.
Okay.
This is going to be a bit weird, but the UK.
Yeah. Why am I not surprised? What, the famous Europhile country, the UK?
The EU lovers. Yeah. In the UK, the turnout was 37%.
That's low. But I think
that is very low. Yeah.
I think in the UK, people were also kind of confused and conflicted. Many people thought the election shouldn't be happening anyway.
Exactly. It was called in very like, short notice, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But actually, the lowest level was at Slovakia, which was 22.7%.
Wow, that is large.
Yeah. Like Slovakians just went, what?
Wow.
The European elections? What? What's that? Yeah. And of course, there are many theories as to why so many people have voted in these elections. One was people being scared of the rise of the far right. So that's how they kind of voiced that fear. The other one was all these being protest votes or this being a battle between pan-Europeans and Eurosceptics.
Mm-hmm.
Another idea was youth mobilization around the green agenda, vote for climate,
yeah,
and the civil disobedience movement. Or the EU institutions actually have great campaigns to increase the percentage of voter turnout as well.
And I think also with Brexit being on the news Europe-wide and also Euroscepticism on the rise in so many countries, the EU is very much in people's minds and they're actually engaging and thinking about it as a concept, not just as something they take for granted and as something that they can't change, but as something that they have some kind of say over.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that the increase in votes that the kind of far-right Eurosceptic parties have experienced across the EU in these elections. But I think the silver lining in that is that a lot of people who felt that they were never represented at any level in politics are now feeling that the political arena is somewhere that their voice can be represented. And I think that is, that is good, even if you don't agree at all with what these parties are saying.
Yeah, I mean, ideology is one thing, but the fact that they did get politicized and mobilized as a result of seeing their views being represented.
Yeah, and I think once you take people off the streets and away from their bedrooms where they're just getting radicalized, where they're engaging with conspiracy theories, and you're getting them to express their political ideas through the democratic system, I do think that's more positive for democracy as a whole.
Yeah, and about your point regarding Brexit, I think we've talked about this on the podcast. Some European countries that had debates over leaving the EU, seeing how the British politicians have been trying to manage the process and the results of the referendum, seeing that now some European countries are like, no, we really... No, we're good in the EU. We love the EU.
Yeah, I think you're right, because as we covered in a recent episode, the Sweden Democrats, who were heavily Eurosceptic, they're not anymore. They're like, we want to reform it. Marine Le Pen in France, her far-right party, Rassemblement National, they're not Eurosceptic anymore. They want to reform it. So I think it's partly that Brexit is such a shit show, but also I think that the far-right is slowly realizing how much the EU and European structures can be a supporting mechanism for the spread of the far-right ideas and for far-right parties working together.
Exactly. Because now they're forming an alliance as well. Because in the past, they were some just individual far-right parties and they're in the member states. But now they're like, oh, you're like me too? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you too. Now there's, you know, they're coming together too.
Yeah, we both hate refugees. Amazing. Do you hate women too? Oh my God.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, but I think also those far-right parties that previously campaigned on a platform of leaving the EU realized that they would lose votes because Europeans saw what Brexit could do. You know? So I think that's why they also had to change.
Yeah.
But anyway, whichever of these things, a combination of these coming together resulted in a higher turnout, right? So more than 200 million people have voted, and we have a very different looking parliament after the elections. Overall results. So the European People's Party, the centre-right group, and the SND, the Social Democrats, the centre-leftists, they both got a bit over 20%. The EPP, the European People's Party, did slightly better than the SND, the Social Democrats, so just a few points more. But this means that they both lost over 30 seats in the parliament.
So they're very much weakened, because they used to be such a dominant, and they still will be the dominant force, but compared to how much they monopolized the parliament before, this is quite a big difference, right?
Exactly. Since the first European elections, both parties had the absolute majority in the parliament until these elections. So now with these percentages, they appear to have lost their absolute majorities, which means since 1979.
Wow, that's huge.
And these centrist parties, like, they really failed. I was actually in the European Parliament watching the results with the European Greens in the Green Room. And at some point, I made my way to some of the other parties' rooms just to see how everything was going over there and how those rooms look like. And I think I saw the S&D's room just completely dead.
Really?
I think there were only a couple of middle-aged white men in both rooms, just like looking at their iPads, trying to figure out how that technology works. But no drinks, no young people, no partying, no celebration, because obviously there's nothing to celebrate, which is exactly the opposite of what was going on in the Green Room.
Wow. And I guess also another big winner, apart from the Greens, in these European elections has been the Liberals, because their group, ALDE, they've gained 37 seats, which is really amazing. And they've gained seats all around Europe. And they're now on 105 seats. So not that far behind the Social Democrats. So they've really gained a lot of power in this election too.
Exactly. So the third party is ALDE, the Liberals, who got almost 14%. And the fourth is no other than the Greens / EFA Green.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
Cut it out. Cut it out. But the Greens got over 9%.
Yes, indeed. So the Green wave has rippled into the European Parliament, increasing the number of the small but mighty Greens EFA group from 50 to 69. And as you say, making them the fourth largest grouping in the hemicycle. Interestingly, around 50 of these 69 Green MEPs are new. So it's a really fresh group of people with a lot to learn quickly. And also a really great showing for women and people of colour being elected.
Yes. And also, you know, after the elections, there are some transfers and some people changing the groups within the parliament. So it looks like the Greens EFA group is going to have more than 70 seats.
That's fantastic. What we must bear in mind, though, is that what could happen is that two of the smaller far-right Eurosceptic parties in the European Parliament could join together. They're in talks right now and therefore bypass the Greens and become the fourth largest group in the European Parliament. So obviously talks are still ongoing about what these groups are going to look like. But this is the kind of general outline.
Yeah. So basically, with the Greens and ALDE making huge gains, the message is clear, right? European voters want to change. Mm-hmm. But let's first get more into detail about how the Greens did. And let's start with good news and the positive ones.
The Green wave even reached into parts of Europe that have been stubbornly resistant to the growing pull of environmental parties, such as in Portugal. But let's start with the countries who've already experienced the Green wave since it crashed into the shores of Europe in October 2018. Okay, Luxembourg, strongest election result ever, and the Greens are now the third biggest party.
Yay!
Germany capitalized on its recent fantastic elections earlier this year and last year, and is now the second biggest party. The Greens are on 22% behind Angela Merkel's CDU.
And they've bitten the traditional centre-left Social Democratic Party, SPD.
Yeah. Belgium, also a success story. And actually, it's a bit of a strange situation now because Belgium had triple elections that day. So they had elections to their European Parliament, to their federal parliament, and to their regional parliament. And there are so many parliaments in Brussels, like I'm confused.
Everyone is confused. Belgians are confused too.
That's true. But there's quite a strange situation now because Flanders voted really differently. Like their first two parties are far-right anti-immigration. And then the French-speaking part, Wallonia, the Social Democrats came first and then the Greens came third. So in terms of how it's going to work in the national parliament, mixing these two like groupings together, that's going to be interesting.
Good luck with that.
Good luck with that. They're probably used to complex negotiations already, hopefully. But at the European level, Belgium did see both its Green parties do really well. So really continuing the Green wave there too. Okay, Finland. So they built on that Green wave they saw recently and they doubled their seats from 1 to 2 MEPs. And they're now the second biggest party.
Which is a reflection of what happened in their general elections just like a month ago.
Exactly. Sweden, so that had a Green wave recently, which we covered earlier this year. And in their general election, the Greens came back into coalition with the Social Democrats. But
they actually lost seats, right?
Yeah. They're the one country from the Green wave who lost 2 seats out of their 4 seats.
That's health.
Yeah, and we'll have to talk more about why that happened because it was quite a complex situation. But the good news from Sweden is that the Sweden Democrats, the far-right party that has so much media attention given to it, actually did less well than people expected and came third with 2 seats.
If you're enjoying this episode, check out our previous news episodes about green politics around the world, and also our interviews with green politicians, activists, and experts.
There's clearly a pattern here with the types of countries that we're talking about. in terms of them being all Western European. So other countries that haven't experienced a green wave recently, but which also experienced their first green wave, are Austria, for example, who more than tripled the result of their last national election, and they're now on 14%.
In France, the Greens came in a surprising third place, so now they're going to have 12 seats. And I think they doubled the number of seats, right? They had 6 seats in the previous parliament, now they're going to have 12.
Mm-hmm. And they are the most popular party with 18 to 34-year-olds, and got a record 3 million votes, which is huge. Ireland was a really exciting result of the night, because they had no MEPs before last week, and they got the most first preference votes of all the parties standing, which is incredible.
Nice.
Yeah, so they got their first two MEPs with more than 15% of first preference votes.
So good. Denmark, we also talked about how they had a record voter turnout. The Greens in Denmark doubled their seats. So they had one MEP in the previous parliament. Now they're going to have two. What about in the UK? Let's talk about the UK too.
Okay, apart from Ireland, that was the biggest surprise of the night and the biggest result as well, because UK MEPs increased from 3 to 7, so more than doubled. Mm-hmm. And, you know, living in the UK, I think there's a couple reasons for this. Brexit was obviously a factor. A lot of left-wing voters who felt betrayed by Labour's stance on Brexit
came over
to the Greens.
Which stance?
Exactly.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And the Greens' pro-European stance helped them with some people. Also, Extinction Rebellion, the youth climate strikes, they also played a role. So, yeah, but also, interesting fact from the UK, I think, is that one of the reasons why people are getting more aware about environmental issues is because of these nature programs presented by David Attenborough, who's our national treasure.
Mm.
Yeah, and they are absolutely beautiful programs he's been making for decades about nature all around the world. And he's really getting political at the moment. His latest series has been talking about the effects of people, of plastic pollution in the seas, of deforestation. Before, you'd watch his programs and think that everything was fine, that species and nature was abundant everywhere, and you'd have no idea about climate change or deforestation. It felt like a kind of a mask before. It felt like he was hiding a lot. But now he's just being more honest in his programs, and it's politicized a lot of people and made them more conscious about plastic, about climate change. So interestingly, I think it was a TV show which played quite a large role, along with other stuff, but in making ordinary people a bit more aware.
Yes.
And actually, it'd be quite interesting to know, if all of you listening, you know, if there's a country-specific cultural event or trend that's elevated the green cause in your country. So yeah, let us know if you think there's something.
Yeah, and it's also... it's really interesting to see now that we have the results and everyone is kind of trying to figure out why we're having this kind of a green wave. And this debate, I mean, you could see it even on mainstream media. And some media outlets are trying to limit the reason why we're having a green wave to only environmental activism or climate change related reasons. And I think it was in our latest episode called The Green Wave Continues, I said something like, people's survival mechanism got recoded. Like in the past, people would vote for economic reasons, for more jobs, for the minimum wage to be raised, or for refugees to be deported out of the country because they believed that their survival was dependent on those things, right? But then thanks to the Greens, alarmed but hopeful messaging around the climate crisis, thanks to the civil disobedience movement's activism, and of course those kids, the youngsters who were out on the street, they made people more aware of the kind of threat we're facing and our planet is facing. And I think it just, at some point, people just went, oh yeah, I probably won't need an increase in the minimum wage if I just don't have a planet to live in.
Yes.
But on top of people realizing, oh yeah, we actually need a planet to live in, the Greens also have managed to articulate a vision on social and economic issues. But this vision is different to other parties in the sense that, yes, it is pro-immigrant and pro-Europe, and there are other parties in the parliament that are pro-immigrant and pro-Europe. But the Greens' vision also sees the intersectionality between these issues and the issues Europe is facing right now. how they're all interlinked.
And I think people realized in this election that they don't have to choose between social justice and environmental justice.
Exactly.
I think also this positive vision and like hope-filled messaging that Green parties really use, which I think is also the reason why, from what I've seen, people involved in Green parties, even though it can be really challenging, and it's not a depressing, even though you're campaigning against upcoming ecological catastrophe, actually it's quite a positive endeavor because you're working with people towards change, and it's a vision of something positive, and it stops you feeling in denial, it stops you feeling paralyzed.
You feel like someone is doing something.
Yeah.
You can see it. You can see that someone is doing something. Instead of being on the debate stage and saying, yeah, the Paris Agreement, or the COP24 in Poland.
Yeah.
No, but we're talking about climate emergency. I really don't want to hear about the climate agreement and what you think of it.
Yeah.
Timmermans said, vote green on one of the debates.
Oh, wait, so he's the social democratic candidate for the presidency of the EU Commission, right?
Exactly, and the incumbent president of the Commission, he said, vote green, I am green, my party is green. So he basically kind of made the green agenda seem like we're all greens except for these a few far-right parties.
Mm.
But there is a huge difference on how you actually deal and how you implement your green agenda.
Yeah, and there's also a huge difference between, you know, voting for policy because you kind of feel like you have to and because people are watching you, and being the party that is full of ideas that created that policy.
And a party that's been screaming this for years and years. But also, you know how we see the government and politicians as our parents, right? When you're a kid, your parents take care of you.
Right.
When you're an adult, your government takes care of you.
Is this the George Lakoff theory about different types of parenting? Okay.
I think for a while, politicians' agendas have neglected our home, the environment, the planet. And finally, you see parental figures that are interested in taking care of your home.
Hmm.
Now you have parents or parental figures that actually care about your home and say that they're going to take care of your home and make it better.
Yeah.
So I think because you want to feel safe, that feeling combined with alarmed but hopeful message of the Green Party, I think that made them stand out amongst the other groups and parties.
Huh. Yeah, I haven't heard that analysis. That's interesting. I think also the idea of like parties stepping up and telling difficult truths, being willing to take responsibility for really hard changes that might potentially have to be made, I think that's increasingly appealing to people.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's definitely been a shift, maybe with, you know, parties at national level becoming more experienced, having better speakers, having more media experience, with being able to convey that they're not the kind of the obsessive outsider who's just, you know, ringing the bell on climate change and can't think about anything else, but that they're like, you know, responsible adults as well who are reasonable, who do live in the real world and so on. And I think this is something that's really coming out of decades of Green parties building on their experience.
Professionalizing.
Yeah, and increasingly attracting more people to the Greens to give them a bigger pool of people that are talented, that will be good politicians.
And we need to keep in mind that all of this happened in spite of the media covering so little of the Green Wave and what was happening with the Greens. Like, even though these elections, the Greens had massive gains, the mainstream media just chose to talk about the rise of the far right. And that just, I mean, it's a no-brainer because hope is just boring and fear sells.
Yeah.
Like, BBC, the first 16 minutes of the BBC's 10 o'clock news right after the election, so this is the 27th. It only had two mentions of the Greens, the first 16 minutes.
Yeah.
This is a party that got about 2 million votes like a day ago. 3 MEPs to 7 MEPs.
Yeah. The Netherlands is a really good example of the far right being hyped up to such an extent that then the election results actually a bit of a surprise to everyone. Because what happened there was that Thierry Baudet, who is actually Dutch, I don't know why I'm saying his name in a French way, it's because it's a French name, so it confuses me, but he's from this kind of new party, Forum for Democracy, mm-hmm. and the media loves him. He just attracts cameras because he's charismatic, he's pseudo-intellectual, and the media really had this European election in the Netherlands pitched as a battle between him and Mark Rutte, who's the current prime minister from the centre-right party.
Mm-hmm.
And there were debates between them. But actually what happened in the end was that the Social Democratic Party actually came first. So mm-hmm. it wasn't, those two parties didn't even come first. So there's been some kind of surprise resurgences of the Social Democrats across Europe as well. And even though there's been an increase in the far right, for example, this party in the Netherlands, Forum for Democracy, it gained a lot of seats in the European elections, but actually most of their seats came directly from the seats of the Freedom Party, which is a far-right party which just completely declined this year.
Mm-hmm.
So actually the seats are moving around a lot with the far-right, and we see the same in the UK where the Brexit Party got 27 seats, which is the most seats out of any single political party in the European Parliament. But 24 of those seats were UKIP before.
Exactly.
So it's not a huge increase.
I mean, there is just a huge contrast between how much mainstream media covers the rise of the far right and then how well they do at the end. And we've seen this in pretty much every single election that was held in Europe in 2018 and 19. But looking at the general results, the far right will hold about 25% of the seats in European Parliament, and that's up from about 20%. Yes, it is their best showing ever, but also not exactly a European sweep.
Yeah, that's true. From the news, you'd think that they just owned the European Parliament.
Yeah. I mean, they haven't been defeated or gone away in any way, shape or form, but this is not tidal wave taking over the European Parliament either.
I guess it depends where you look as well, because in the countries that are quite big and that have a lot of influence, like France, to be fair, Marine Le Pen's party, the far-right anti-immigration party, they mm-hmm. did come first. And also Salvini, Matteo Salvini's party in Italy, the Lega, also came first. That's far-right anti-immigration party. So when you even it out across Europe, their group is quite small, but actually in a lot of quite big European countries, they're dominating.
Yeah.
Okay, so speaking about Southern Europe, Portugal, as we've already mentioned, got their first Green MEP elected for the Greens since 1989 from a new Green party, People, Animals, Nature. So that's great news from Portugal, who is bucking a trend in terms of Southern European countries not really being responsive to the Greens.
France and Portugal.
Depending on if you count France as Southern European or Western European. I would class it as Western European. But interestingly, the Greens did especially well in North France. So actually the Southern European part of France is less Green friendly, which does actually follow the trend of,
yeah.
of other countries like Italy and Spain, which and Greece. Who really were not giving love to the Greens last week.
A bit cold to the Greens.
Yeah, a little bit cold. What we can really notice is that this is a region of the EU where Green parties are not faring well at all. Italy's Green Party, which has been an alliance really rather than a party, didn't get an MEP again. Spain lost its Green MEP, and it did retain, however, its MEP from the Catalan Greens. Greece, similarly, Greens did not have an MEP and still don't.
Yeah, that's something that's not very positive about the Green Wave, right? Like, it's not very evenly distributed across Europe.
Yes.
But also one thing to keep in mind, because you mentioned Spain. Yes, the party that got the most votes and now is the dominant party is not a Green party. But they did campaign on a Green New Deal, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that was a huge part of their campaign, which is a good sign, which means the people are becoming more aware of that. Like, that is something that affects their decision when they vote for a party.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of debate within, you know, Green parties as to what their role is. You know, is their role to take power themselves, or is it just to influence other parties to take on Green policies?
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, the Spanish Green Party, Equal, has been quite successful. But interestingly, in Spain, this is one of the countries where the Social Democrats are enjoying a really dramatic comeback.
Mm-hmm.
They absolutely smashed it in the general elections earlier this year. And now they came first again in the European elections with 32%. But the only problem for the Greens in this scenario is that they're taking a lot of voters back that had gone to Podemos, the far left party, which often goes into alliances with the Greens. For example, they did in the European elections. So Greens are struggling in Spain at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good news for social democracy. And, you know, we've seen similar news in Portugal, which also has a strong democratic party, which did really well and got the highest percentage of votes in the European elections. So these Southern Europeans are more attached to their social democratic parties, perhaps, than the rest of Europe. And it depends what issues are the most important, really, I think.
Exactly. This actually reminds me that research you sent me a couple of days ago. It was the comparison between how important the environment is to Northern European and how important it is to Southern Europeans. And yeah, it turns out there is a big divide. The importance of the environment to citizens in Southern Europe is still only at the level equivalent to the lowest this century for those in Northern Europe. So that may also explain why we haven't seen a huge green wave taken over in Southern Europe.
Yeah. And I guess also Southern European countries have been hit so hard by austerity.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why they're kind of focusing on economic issues and social justice. And countries such as Italy and Eastern European countries have been really affected by asylum seekers and the refugee crisis, in inverted commas. So there's been a lot of attention on that in the media, and they're shifting to kind of very right-wing parties in response to that. So I guess it depends on so many different factors.
Yeah.
It was a disappointing set of results for Greens in Eastern Europe, certainly, because the Green Hungarian MEP, Benedikt Jávor, who's great, he lost his seat.
Yeah, another Eastern European country, Poland, they didn't have a Green MEP, but the Greens this time campaigned really hard, cooperating with the European Greens in Brussels. And their MEP candidate, Milka Stapien, whom we interviewed on the podcast, didn't make it to the European Parliament this time.
It's a real shame that Milka didn't get in, because she'd have been an amazing MEP.
Yeah, but I think if they keep it up, we may see very different results in 5 years in the next European elections, and even when it comes to their general elections.
That will be really interesting to see what happens, especially as Poland has a general election coming up this autumn.
Yes.
While we're talking about this part of Europe, let's just quickly look at Hungary, because as I already said, they lost their only Green MEP, which is a real shame. And what we're seeing there is similar to Poland, where the ruling right-wing anti-immigration party, which is Fidesz in Hungary, ruled by PM Viktor Orban, also swept into first place in this election. He won 52% of the vote, which is huge. And these are both parties that openly say, we don't want to abide by your rules in terms of how many refugees we have to take in.
Yeah, very anti-immigration too.
Extremely anti-immigration, anti-Muslim. And they also have both been kind of seen some disciplinary action from the EU in terms of not abiding by rules about democracy, about taking their quota of refugees. And they are the first countries that have actually had some disciplinary action taken against them.
Yeah, it is concerning that the green wave is not evenly distributed across Europe. But at least now we know that we're going to have over 70 MEPs from the Greens EFA group in the parliament.
Yes.
And we talk about this on a podcast quite often, actually. We talk about what kind of change even that one Green in the room can bring to the table and the difference that that one Green can make. Well, in the new mandate in the parliament, we're going to have over 70 of them in that room, in that building. So we have a lot to look forward to.
Yes. The Greens EFA group, which has already been punching far above its weight for the last 5 years, is now strengthened. And we're looking forward to seeing what it's going to do in its fight for environmental action, social justice and civil rights.
Yes. And you'll hear all about that fight right here on this podcast. All right, folks, that's our show. You can follow us and show us some love on Twitter at Big Green Pulp Pod. You can find us on any podcast apps, iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud.
And if you want to help us make green politics more accessible, subscribe and support us by leaving us a rating or a review. Thank you so much, and see you soon.